My name is Matt Stranick, and this is the Today New Brunswick, Tomorrow the World podcast. This is the latest in our highly rad and highly exclusive and highly legit, very high is what we are on the show, in terms of interviews and guests. And this is our second drummer interview in as many weeks. Folks, I could not be more stoked. This is one of those things where I'm just like, any expectations I had for the interview aspect of the show are just completely now in shambles, having the privilege here to talk with Colin Brooks. He's in Brooklyn, New York, USA. You probably, if you're checking out this show whatsoever, would know him primarily, but definitely not exclusively, as the drummer for Sam I Am off their brilliant, brilliant goddamn record from last year, Stowaway. We're going to be talking about that. But then also, as you may know from the academic-ish kind of bent to the other podcast, because some of you do follow both, you weirdos, is that I'm interested in talking about, you know, what motivates Colin, what he's interested in, and what he's been up to. Because honestly, the dude's discography or Discogs page, his artist Discogs page, I don't know if you've looked at it, Colin, it's lit, is what it is. So, okay. Man, thanks a lot for being here. Just really much appreciation and respect, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, the privilege is mine. And again, the way that I've been kind of going about this series is really just I've been checking out people's Instagram, right? I follow people on Instagram. I'm a middle-aged punk guy. And to me, I just go, okay, here's somebody who's doing something extremely cool, whether it's just in a band or whatnot. And then it's an opportunity to kind of pull back a few layers and see what else they've got going on. So again, just correct me if I'm wrong, Colin. I'm just going to, you'll have to indulge me, because these are just a few of the acts that I discovered that you're associated with through a combination of record label pages, other podcasts, Discogs, Wikipedia, everything and everything. And what I got is very incomplete list, very incomplete list, but it's also a highly rad list. So for those of you following along at home, from Little Rock, Arkansas, Substance, which I gather is a pretty legit punk band in as much as, it was going on back in the day. And also Red 40, where you played guitar in a band with Ben Nichols, who most people may know is from Lucero. I mean, really, you want to just talk about that whole growing up in Arkansas, what turned you on to music, what kind of music was in the home, if any, and what kind of led you into a path where you're playing punk in some of these bands in a pretty small center. You know, it's not New York, it's not Los Angeles, it's not Seattle even, it's something else, right? So, I mean, what was that like coming up as a young person and starting to play in that kind of situation, sir?
It was great. Let's see. I've been into music for really as long as I can remember. My parents were both into music. My mom with her Motown and sort of Dionne Warwick things. And my dad was into all that stuff as well. But he also liked stuff like Funkadelic and, Led Zeppelin and Yes and things like that.
Awesome.
So he had a pretty big record collection. He'd done some traveling and when he had a minor league baseball career, so he had a bunch of stuff. And my parents were really—they would just put their records on the floor in stacks. And as a kid, I remember just kind of crawling and flipping through them. And that's kind of how I learned to read, was like reading record sleeves and stuff like that, reading lyric sheets. So I was always into music, and my dad also got a guitar maybe a year or so after I was born and started sort of teaching himself how to play. His brothers bought some instruments, and I had a cousin that played drums, and they would all get together and have these parties where they would sort of jam, and that looked like fun to me.
Yeah.
So by the time I got to be about seven, I sort of asked him if Santa might be interested in getting me a drum set. And that Christmas, a drum set arrived. And within a couple of days, really a week, I could play along to some things, and he and I were jamming together. Awesome. So it was almost like it was something I was kind of born to do. I don't know. Or, you know,
it isn't born to that.
Well, it wasn't particularly hard for me. I didn't have to work too much at it. I mean, I had to put in the work to figure things out, but it came pretty naturally to me. I'll say that.
That is legit. And at such a young age, though, I mean, just speaking as somebody who, you know, is an educator for a living, I mean, there's so much potential. There's so much going on. I mean, you're a dad. I mean, so you must see this with your own children, right? Like I do. I'm like, wow, you know, the amount that you're capable of as a young person, if you just sort of are given the opportunity to do something, it's really, you know, there's a lot that can happen during those years. So for you to kind of have that associated with family and everything like that, I mean, that sounds awesome. Those parties must have been super fun, bro.
Yeah, they were. I mean, you know, lots of full ashtrays, lots of beer cans, and but for the most part, they were having a good time. You know, boomers, and I enjoyed hearing them play. And it just seemed like they had like a rock band, even though they didn't. I mean, they just did it for fun. That was just their hang, you know.
Yes.
So growing up, you know, it would be Saturday afternoon, and I'd be watching something on TV or probably listening to a record, and my dad would come up and say, "Hey, do you want to go jam?" And I would say, "Yeah." And we'd go up into our attic where the drums were set up and he had his guitar amp, and we'd play for an hour or two. And we did that until I started meeting friends around the neighborhood that, you know, were into music. And this was all was happening when we were living. I was born in Little Rock, and then we lived in Memphis, Tennessee for 4 years, from first grade until fourth grade. What's that?
Great music town, Memphis.
Yeah. I wasn't really quite aware of it at the time when I was there. I mean, it was just sort of Elvis. I didn't know much about Sun Records and all the things that, you know, make. I mean, we went down to Beale Street a couple of times and we saw Kool and the Gang play at Memphis in May and things like that. But, you know, I wasn't aware of the rich history. Of course, I was really young, you know. But yeah, so we ended up moving back to Little Rock, and I brought my drums with me, and at the end of fifth grade was when I met my best friend then and my best friend now, one Jason White, who is the guy that is probably best known as the guy that plays on stage with Green Day.
No, he's a he's carved a very unique and significant path through popular music. and that's awesome that you guys remain tight. It's great that you guys keep up with that friendship. I have friends from when I was a kid, and they mean everything to me, right? So
yeah,
that was awesome, man.
Yeah, and same with him. So we started playing together right away. We started riding bikes and getting skateboarding, and then our musical taste started to change from the sort of hard rock stuff we were listening to into more, I guess at first it was sort of, you know, thrash metal, you know, Anthrax, Slayer, Metallica, the big three or whatever. And we, after about a year of being in that stuff, we both moved into, you know, sort of punk and hardcore straight away. You know, Minor Threat and 7 Seconds, DRI, and all those bands.
As so many of us did. And bro,
yeah.
I get the feeling that you and I are around similar ages. I mean, I'm sort of mid-40s kind of vintage. And I, you know, in my smaller, you know, Canadian maritime scene, I mean, a lot of what got us kind of just, you know, regional, rural kind of kids into, you know, the Descendants or hardcore or any of that stuff really was grunge. I mean, and so you know, yeah. like
well, Pearl Jam. Well, I'm older than you, so that okay, was not
fair
it.
Enough. On the scene prior to, okay, bro.
Yeah, I'm about to turn
the time there. You know.
But. Yeah, I'm almost 50. By the time grunge and whatnot became popular, I was already in bands and had been inspired by the stuff that inspired grunge. So I was looking to get away from grunge.
You were
actually.
Looking away from it. You were like,
no
you
offense.
Know, so you were well into being in bands. So including, again, folks, I'll just sort of take you through some of the more interesting bits that I found on the Discogs. In addition, so I guess like Red 40, I mean, was that one of those things that just lasted a couple of years, or, I mean, what even was that? Because then we also, in the same sort of general timeline, we're getting into, you participated with a group of rockers called Ho Hum. Is that correct? Kind of a garage rock kind of vibe.
Kind of more of a pop, yeah, but a little garage rock. I mean, they're pretty inspired by the Replacements and Uncle Tupelo and bands like that.
Awesome. All that really good stuff of the era, right? I mean, you know. So some of those projects, I mean, you look at them now and you go, man, you know, like that kind of rings out as being, you know, significant in the history of independent music in its own way, right? I mean...
I suppose, in retrospect, I mean, I don't think any of the bands that I was in Little Rock were popular, particularly other than like maybe sort of regionally or in Little Rock itself. You know, I don't think any of those bands really broke out on a national scale or got any sort of recognition there. But yeah, Red 40 was a cool thing. I'd been in a number of bands in high school playing drums and was a friend of mine and the guitar player in Substance. And when he wanted to start this band, Red 40, we thought it would be fun to switch instruments because he hadn't played drums in a band and I hadn't played guitar in a band. I'm sure it would have been a better band had we just stuck to our regular instruments, but we had a lot of fun. And it was a good, you know, maybe two and a half years that, we did Red 40, with Ben.
That's significant. When you're young, that is a significant, amount of time, right?
Because... Yeah. I mean, I think we were out of either graduating from high school or just out of high school when that happened.
That is actually formative times.
So sort of like 19 to like 21 or something like that, you know.
The golden years, folks, you never get them back. You can't remember them, and you never get them back.
No, you can't. But, yeah, so that was a cool thing. Ben was very motivated and was very hardworking. And, you know, I would say myself and Steve were a little less motivated and a little less hardworking. But he ended up moving to Memphis anyway, and that was kind of the end of that. And that's gave him the opportunity to get Lucero together and have a long and successful career doing his thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm happy for him.
Absolutely. And again, he's just, you know, speaking of, so this is where I sort of see, you know, what you're doing now with Sam I Am, as in you're locked in with a band that's locked in. You're not locked into anything. But it's like you're involved in a situation with such great songwriters, right? Because you have one of, like, for lyrics and for singing, you know, for my money, you guys got one of the best in the game ever, right?
I fully agree. I totally agree.
And so when you look at somebody like, you know, Ben, who is just such a significant sort of singular talent as a writer, I just think, okay, you know, Colin is sort of hanging with people who know how to write. You're a writer of your own too. Like, I mean, I've been looking at the new Same recordings on Bandcamp, and man, I mean, they're really eclectic. And so when I look at some of your other, you know, projects that maybe aren't as well known as, you know, Sam I Am, obviously. So when I see, like, you know, you're playing with in a YouTube clip with Dan Zane and friends, you know, or things like that, I'm like, this guy is really drawing from a whole wide range of influences or with C. Ray, right? Brooklyn space rock, I think, is how it's described. I mean, sure. You really, it seems like you're putting yourself out there in a wide range of contexts as a player, but then it also seems like you naturally go to where the songwriting is. Is that a fair statement, pal?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely am. I like songs, and I like people who like songs and who, you know, are interested in writing songs. But, you know, I just sort of go where music and opportunity takes me. I've been lucky to have met and known and gotten to opportunities to play with interesting people that have had interesting projects. But so, yeah, and it's much easier to do when you have common interests, like, oh, we, you know, like the Rolling Stones, or we like Arthur Lee and Love, you know, or you know, those are kind of touchstones for me. If anybody says, oh, yeah, you know, I'm into the Beatles, or I'm into Herman's Hermits or something like that, then I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. I'm into Herman's Hermits, too.
I'm in the club, too. I got the energy dome at home. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And so I do wonder, though, I mean, and this is even mentioning about Big Cat, right? I mean, again, that's you've been so what I gather is that there's even like an active Big Cat's Facebook page where there were like Christmas shows every so often.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there's like recordings or any kind of things going on from that world that you can bring us up to speed on.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Big Cats were started in 1993 going into 94 or 94 going into 95. I can't remember which exactly. It's been a long time. But they are my best friends and have been my best friends since then. So the band remains as an entity, whether we play or don't play for 2 or 3 years. But we do try to get together. You know, one of the things that keeps our friendship happening is being able to get together and do gigs when we can, or practice. If we, if Bert Taggart, our songwriter, has songs, then we try and put them together. And if we have enough songs and enough time, then we go in the studio and, record them. And you know, since he has a small label called Max Recordings, generally they come out via that. So we've been discussing the possibility of a holiday show this year in Little Rock, but it depends on sort of what Jason's touring schedule is, you know.
kind of a high profile guy, right? With the new Green Day record out this year, and they're touring a lot, obviously.
Yes,
yeah. I may say, man, I mean, to me, just the past couple of years since we've entered kind of like what the post-COVID thing is that, I mean, first of all, it's great that, you know, people can actually make a living touring music again. Mm-hmm. But then as well, it seems like there's so much, you know, so many great acts, including Sam I Am, including, you know, Lucero, including Hot Water Music, including, you know, like, it just seems like within the past, including Green Day, including Gaslight Anthem, I mean, including Pearl Jam. I mean, if you just kind of want to look at the wide kind of range of rock music that's kind of coming out from significant acts, and I include Sam I Am as being, you know, significant for lots of reasons, you know, thanks, just within the past 2 years, it just seems like it's been a really fertile time for, you know, this kind of music to kind of get out to people, maybe in a frame that hasn't been really as recognized before. I don't want to say it's like a resurgence of the guitar-based music, but it seems like, you know, it's got a higher profile. Like, you know, bands like Turnstile, right? There's this thing on, you know, YouTube with like James Hetfield and Rob Halford, like watching a Turnstile show in Norway. Do you ever get the sense that, like, you know, maybe we're kind of in a, you know, everything kind of comes in waves or whatever, but like, maybe
sure,
we're kind of on the upswing here a little bit, pal? Do you see that?
Well, I mean, I hope so, since that's, you know, kind of where what I like and where I dwell for the most part, at least as far as projects that I'm doing, you know, I mean, there's always guitar involved. I mean, I feel like guitar bands are always around, and doing their thing. Yeah, I'm really not sure.
Fair enough, bro. I got to wax existential on it a little bit.
Sure. You know, yeah, of course. I mean, like I said, I hope so. You know, when the top 10 reads Sam I Am and Green Day and everybody else, then, you know.
As Britney Spears kind of can just kind of cut out a little bit of space, you know, but. Anyway, bro. So this has been awesome. I mean, this is just really where I appreciate the personal connections here. So, you know, just in terms of the lived experience, so to speak. I wonder, you know, in terms of where members of Sam I Am literally live all around the U.S. What's caused you to kind of gravitate towards Brooklyn as kind of being the place for you as a place to live and work out of?
Oh, well, I moved here in 1998 to join a band called Skeleton Key. And I had a number of friends from Little Rock that were kind of living here, just kind of trying out the city and doing that. And I ended up staying. I'm mostly here now because I am married to a woman that's from upstate New York and has lived here since she was a teenager. And is not particularly fond of living anywhere else. So if it were up to me, I probably would have hit the road a while ago. But happy wife, happy life. So so here I am. So that's my main reason for being here these days.
Personal reasons. And again, I think too, just being able to access, you know, the various networks of musicians and people who go through there. I mean, do you find that's advantageous for you or not really?
It has been, you know, I mean, to be honest, like, as I get older, I go out less, and having a family keeps me inside and kind of glued to my son. And as of late, I've been working a lot out of town. So I'm not really doing too much on the scene here in New York, not like I used to. So lately, no. But in the past, it has been advantageous to be here with a network of musicians. But I kind of find more like, you know, if I were to be doing that, I'd probably rather be someplace out west, like Los Angeles or something. People out there seem to be a little, even if it's a faux niceness, it's generally nicer, more chill. Whereas here in New York, people are New Yorkers and they're kind of like, you know, a little grumpy.
Stereotypes are true.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, even myself, you know, I can be grumpy at times. So I understand. I
find that hard to imagine.
Right.
And I was chatting with David, the drummer for Minneapolis band Rad Owl. And we kind of just struck up like a little Instagram kind of chat kind of thing. And I mentioned that I was going to be speaking with you. And he was just like, Colin is the sweetest guy. You're going to love talking to him. And at one point I was even trying to horn him in to get him in on the interview so I can like be, you guys talk drummer stuff. And then I'll be, you know, this kind of Canadian dude just kind of moderating, but he wasn't able to, but still, you know, it's true. You've got a very positive presence here, bro, is what I'm trying to say. And I do want to be respectful of your time, but I got to just be asking strictly in terms of my incipient fandom here, is that first of all, Sam I Am always puts out such radically beautiful vinyl. I mean, this is for me one of the things that I love about being a music collector is just you open it up and it's like, man, it's goddamn beautiful, right? It's transparent, it's blue, it's got like shot stuff all over it. Right. And I think this speaks to, this was put out through Was this Noise? No, this is Pure Noise Records, right?
Pure Noise, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and you cut all your parts. You recorded all your drums for this in New York, correct?
Yeah,
and like this record, I read, I gather because it's the first Sam I Am record in about like more than 10 years when it was released. So, I mean, it's not really so much how did you become involved with the band or whatnot, but like this band, this record to me is just so good because it like it brings the thing forward. It gives it a reason to be like, this band still has a lot to say. They still have a lot going on in terms of songwriting, in terms of execution. But then it's also like, I guess it was a really difficult record to make logistically. And there were some challenges associated with that. That's what it says on, you know, the, you know, record website or whatnot. So true. I just wonder if you wanted to reflect on, you know, what your involvement with that record has been like, what has been, how it's been received. Are you done touring it now? I suppose you probably are. And I guess what's next for you and Sam I Am, if I could throw all of that to you at once in the later part of the interview here, bro.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, it was difficult logistically because we put together the arrangements or the basic arrangements for the songs without vocals in February of 2020, just before, like maybe 2 or 3 weeks before everything went to lockdown.
Yeah.
So, you know, nobody really knew what was going to happen and or knew what was safe to do or not to do. You know, some people were less worried than others. As it turned out, you know, it was just sort of a thing of my wife saying, well, do whatever you need to do, but if you go get on an airplane and go someplace and come back, you're going to not be able to come back to your house, to our house, until you are, you know, clear. You know, that's just how it was sort of in 2020.
Exactly.
So I said, I don't really think I could do anything unless you guys, unless there's something in the budget that says I can, you know, stay in a hotel room or something like that.
Right.
And even still, I don't know if I want to, you know, die or something. But anyway, as it turned out, after some time passed, Sean, through, Jake at Pure Noise, got in touch with a guy named John Markson, who had a studio in, here in Brooklyn. So our bass player, Chad, painstakingly put our rehearsal tapes onto sort of a grid, and made sessions for each of the songs. So I was able to go in and do the drums to those. I'm sorry. Actually, I take that back. He put the songs on the grid, and I think that they took the drums that had been done in the practice space and put guitars on those to my separated practice drums so that I could go in and do new drums. Then the new drums got sent back to them, where they were able to do those at Black Bear in Gainesville. So then Jason was brought in to sing down there with Wallard and that whole thing. So that's how that whole thing got done. So the arrangements that we'd done in February of 2022 basically were correct, because all the songs ended up working. And it all came together to where I personally was completely satisfied with the record. I think it's really good and really, you know, a new thing for Sam I Am. And, you know, I was buying Sam I Am records when they were coming out, from their very first 7-inch up until
Billy. You're a fan first.
I was a fan first. They were one of my favorite bands when I was in high school. All the Sam I Am I have on vinyl is all colored vinyl. So I've got original New Red Archives editions of that stuff. I'm proud to say.
Seriously, that is sick.
Yeah.
And touring and traveling and all of that, I mean, it looks like, you know, from the social media that it's been pretty well received. But, I mean, I don't know what that means anymore, because everything in the current touring thing is against the artist, right? I mean, it's like, so...
Yeah, well, I'm not really sure what being well received means exactly. I mean, it seemed like I didn't see any bad reviews for it or anybody saying, "Oh, this is shit, I don't like it." Pardon my language. It seemed like most people did like the record, and you know, we did do some tours. We did a tour of Europe earlier this year, in January, we were over there, and awesome. We've been over with Hot Water and Boy Sets Fire the year before that, which is before the record came out.
Awesome.
So we've had some good shows touring, and people seem to be still interested in the band, a lot of places in the world. But what we have coming up is... in August, we have three shows. Let's see, Vancouver, Seattle, and Portland.
Awesome.
With Off With Their Heads. We're playing with those guys again.
Very cool. So, again, you're just sort of kind of back to sort of playing certain gigs at this point when you can.
I mean,
keeping it going to kind of at a dialed down kind of level compared to when that record's first coming out. For instance.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's been that way for a number of years, or basically since I started playing in the band. We do what we can. People have, you know, families and personal lives, and it's a different kind of thing to tour these days than it was when we were in our 20s or in the 90s or, you know, or the 2000s, even.
The aughts.
The aughts, right, is what they call it, right?
Yeah.
So we're just kind of doing what we can, when we can, when it feels right. And, you know, that way we're not really at a risk of burning out or, you know.
Very important. Because, like, this is a band with a more than 30-year history. And, yeah. I mean, you know, you're like, you and I are within 5 years of the same age. So it's sort of like when you kind of look out sort of what's ahead of you, I mean, barring like unforeseen health problems or whatnot. I mean, I've spoken to a few people in my orbit lately about this. It's like, I see no reason not to be involved in this kind of music, you know, as long as I'm capable of. So, I mean, I wonder as we sort of get close to closing her down here, because I do want to be respectful of your time, you know, sort of how you feel as sort of a, you know, somebody who's in the middle of midlife, you know, you're a family guy, you know, you've got a lot going on, a very wide set of musical interests and influences. I guess, like, you know, what do you see for yourself next across all of your musical endeavors? Who are some of your favorite bands that, you know, you enjoy right now, apart from, you know, the punk genre or whatever, or including it. And I guess, you know, what makes you motivated to stay involved in this kind of music?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, first and foremost, I mean, you know, I love music. I think about it all the time, and have done so for since I was a little kid. So it's a big part of who I am. It's there's something playing in my head now. I'm not even going to say what it is, but it just goes. So it never stops. So I'm always interested in playing in some form or fashion. Being a drummer, you know, it's good to have a band to play with. Even though I'm starting to find that, you know, I play a bit of guitar and some other instruments too. So I can do that on my own, and it's fun. It's more like kind of doing a puzzle when I make my own music, because it takes me a month to finish a puzzle, you know, because I have to do it all by myself and I have to find the time to work on the puzzle. But I'm currently working on those puzzles or on a few more puzzles to put out to the internet world. I definitely foresee some more Sam I Am touring. If any of the other bands that I've ever been involved in are interested in reuniting, then I'm happy to do that.
He's open to that. You don't necessarily have to go through an artist representative, folks.
No.
I found out. Because, and again, sir, I mean.
You could just DM me on Instagram.
I'm telling you. I mean, I reach out to people. Like, my thing is, if I'm following you on Instagram, it's because I would be interested in having a conversation with you in real life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So my approach to Instagram is kind of a bit different. I literally just send DMs to people, and, you know, some of them say, some of them just get blocked, you know, out of the gate. Sorry, Jack White. Didn't mean to get in your people's face.
We don't want to talk to that guy anyway.
There's some other dudes I could apologize to. But then on the other hand, it's like for me, you know, I managed to end up having a really rad conversation with you in a legendary band.
You inspired me, Matt, because I was thinking, well, you know, he's just DMing me out of nowhere, and, like, I'm just a guy, and I'm saying, yeah, sure, of course, you know. I was like, I should do that instead of being like, oh, no, I couldn't possibly DM Bob Mould and ask him if he needs a drummer, you know.
And I've got this whole set of, like, side questions about, like, what was it like, you know, coming up in the South, you know, you know, Bob Mould, talking John Worster as the drummer, you're talking Superchunk, right, who, like, from North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking Vail, you're talking Hot Water. It seems like there's all of these acts, all of these artists, you know, even from, like, the southern U.S., which, mm-hmm. Back in the day, back pre-internet, you wouldn't have thought, wow, you know, that's a hotbed of cultural, you know, rock or indie rock or whatnot. But I mean, you know, you guys did, there's a documentary about your guys' scene, right?
Mm-hmm.
there's a documentary that I saw a photograph of you, and I guess there's a soundtrack album that you know some of your early bands contributed to.
Yeah, it was called Towncraft.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, Towncraft. Notes from a Scene, I believe.
Yes.
I think it might be on YouTube.
In its entirety.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah. I haven't seen it for a long time. But, Little Rock was fertile ground. There was a great scene there from, you know, I would say 1988 up until even now. There's still great bands and people that are doing stuff there musically that's interesting, in my opinion. I mean, it's probably because I'm from there and I know these people. It's easier for me to say that's great. There's always been a lot of activity. I mean, there's some really interesting, talented people there. And a few of them are out in the world and a little more well-known than others. But, it's sort of like any smaller city. There's pockets of greatness and pockets of things you'd rather not know about, you know, not just musically, but culturally, you know, you name it.
Man, I just respect, bro, for all of it is what I'm saying. Like, for real. Right. Matt, you've had a busy day. I knew you had appointments and stuff this afternoon. I really, really don't want to keep you much longer here. I would just like to say, man, I've enjoyed this immensely. It's been super cool getting to chat with you. And is there anybody like you want to shout out or anything before I close her down here, pal?
If any of my friends or, you know, compadres in the world are watching, shout out to you. And shout out to you, Matt. Thanks for having me. It's been a fun talk.
Dude, I appreciate it so much for various reasons. So much respect. Much respect from Dan. Guy who co-hosts the show with me, he was in a government of Canada. He works for the government of Canada, and he had a meeting. So,
understandable that he would miss
out. On behalf of the Canadian government, on behalf of the Canadian contingent here, you know, it's like, Much respect and appreciation, sir.
Thank you, Matt. It's good talking
Absolutely.
To you.
Absolutely. I'm going to end the recording. Take care, everybody.
Okay. All right.
Transmitiendo desde las montañas del sureste mexicano.